Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. Adam Sterling with you once again on CFAX 1070. This is Wednesday, October the 5th, 2022. E-minus 10 days until the municipal elections here in the city of Victoria and all other municipalities. I start with Victoria, though, because today is a special day. Multiple candidates vying for your vote to be the next mayor of British Columbia's capital city have assembled here at our live studios at 1420 Broad Street. I'm going to pass things over to debate moderator Ryan Price. Ryan, take it away.
This is a CFAX special presentation brought to you by Hatch & Muir Financial Planning. The 2022 Municipal Election Debates, moderated by Ryan Price on CFAX 1070.
Hello and welcome to our Victoria mayoral debate for candidates running to be mayor in the city of Victoria. Five of the eight candidates who will be on the ballot on October 15th are here in the studio with us right now. And over the next hour, we'll let them introduce themselves to our listeners and those watching our video stream. And we'll get their takes on some of the hot issues in this election and give them a chance to debate each other on topics of their choosing. Our candidates today have been seated at random since the seating order will be determining the speaking order. And I will just let everybody know that candidates will be held strictly to time so we can keep things fair. And I will be displaying this colored card to signify when you've got 10 seconds left so you can wrap up your thought. We're going to dive right into it with introductions. And I mentioned everybody's been seated at random. And we're going to start at my left with Marion Alto, who now has, once I start my timer, 60 seconds to introduce yourself.
Thanks, Ryan, and thanks everyone at CFAX for organizing this opportunity. And also, of course, we'd like to acknowledge that we're sitting here on the traditional territories of the Lekwungen-speaking people, the Songhees and Esquimalt Nations. Thanks to them as well. I am Marion Alto, and I'm running for mayor in Victoria. I'm a mom, I've got two kids, and I've been on council for three terms. And listening to folks over the last number of years and certainly the next few months, I've been listening to people tell me what they want in a mayor, and they've told me a number of different qualities, wanting someone who has integrity and experience, who knows how systems work, but how to make them work better for the people of Victoria, somebody with the courage to make tough decisions in tough times, somebody calm in a crisis. And I think that that's a pretty good summary of what we're all going to be looking for in our next mayor, somebody with integrity, experience, courage, and calm. Calm in a crisis over the next 4 years, as we'll certainly be facing those challenges. Somebody who really gets the work done without necessarily looking for credit or spotlight. And I'd like to say that I've been that kind of counselor, and that's the kind of mayor I'll be.
Great. Turning to our next candidate, seated at random, Brendan Marshall. You have 60 seconds.
Good morning. Thank you, Ryan, and thank you to CFAX. It's really good to be here. My name is Brendan Marshall. I'm born and raised in Victoria. I'm a small business owner along with my wife. We own a small cafe in Esquimalt, and I've living in the region my whole life. I have a deep love for the city, and I feel that it's time for a big change in Victoria, and so I'm really excited to bring my expertise to the table and bring harmony back to Victoria, and bring something new, a new fresh face, new ears, to serve the people of Victoria. The people of Victoria, number one, first and foremost. Thank you.
Next is Rafael Fuentes. You have 60 seconds.
Hi, I'm Rafael Fuentes. I came to Canada when I was 3 years old in 1974 from the Philippines. In a few years, I was a hockey fan. It's fitting that I'm bringing a Philadelphia Flyers jersey at 1420 Broad Street. This was my brother-in-law, Rod Hansen's. My brother-in-law and my daughter, Madrona, both died of cancer, and both were fighters. And I'm a fighter, too. I will fight for affordable housing for everyone. I will fight for your health, mental health, disability, and safety. I will fight for the environment. I will fight for the community prosperity. It will not be easy. But like Martin Luther King, I have been to the mountaintop, and I have seen the promised land. I see a tentless Pandora and less overdoses. I see family doctors and offices and new developments. I see us cutting red tape for homeowners. I see free bus passes and gas cards to renters. I have that vision. I'm Rafael Fuentes.
Thank you very much. Next is Lyle Atkinson. You have 60 seconds.
Hello, my name's Lyle Atkinson. I'm born and raised in Victoria, fifth generation. My family's been here since the beginning of time. I decided to run because I had seen a lot of discourse between the mayor's office, council, and the citizens of Victoria. I've seen crime rate in my own self go up. I've been broken into 5 times. We were put in a situation of having hotels put in our areas without our consultation. They asked for our opinion and did what they wanted to anyway. My property taxes have gone from $1,700 to $4,000 in the last little while. And I think Victoria needs a change, and hopefully I'm the candidate that can get that done. We need to work on a lot of the drug addictions and clean up Pandora.
And finally, Stephen Andrew, 60 seconds.
Thank you very much, Ryan. Good morning, everyone. As Ryan said, my name is Stephen Andrew. You probably know me from my work on television and on radio here, actually on CFAX. But more recently, I was the executive director of a national cancer charity, and I was elected to council in the by-election in 2020. I'm running for mayor because I think we need change. We certainly cannot continue down the road with the past 4 to 8 years. We cannot continue with the idea that the way things have been led at the council table and what has been supported can continue. And I will certainly do that. I really want to focus on public safety, housing, and staying in our lane as a city government. We're elected to run the city, basically, not to become a provincial, federal, or a United Nations. And I think that is the key. Let's work for the city and the residents of the city. Thank you.
Thank you. Those are our introductions. And there are 5 of the 8 candidates who will be on your ballot. I just want to mention the others who are not here. David Arthur Johnston, Rod Graham, and Michelle Wibbelt will also be on your ballot come October 15th. We're going to get into our next round. Just before we do, I'll just make a quick note to the candidates to make sure you tuck into your microphones so we can be sure to hear you clearly. Our first round is our one-on-one debate. And in this round, each candidate gets to ask a question of one of the other candidates seated around the table. It must be one of the other candidates. You cannot debate yourself. You'll have 30 seconds to ask the question. Then you'll have 2.5 minutes for the answer and to engage in discussion between those two candidates. We ask that only the two involved speak during that exchange. And since we started with Marian Alto, we're going to skip over to Brendan Marshall, who will lead off this segment. So, Brendan, you get to choose a candidate, pose a question, and then engage in debate.
Sure. This question is for Stephen Andrew. I believe it's important for voters to know where loyalties lie and if candidates in this election are being backed and or supported by outside interests, including provincial and federal political parties. It's a well-known fact that Marian Alto is the NDP favorite in this race and is the de facto leader of the unofficial Together Victoria 2.0 slate. However, what voters may not know is that your campaign manager, Stephen, Ryan Painter, has been a big supporter of Together Victoria.
We're out of time for the question. Just wrap up the question real quick. We're out of time.
Well, are you a member of or have received campaign donations directly or assistance or indirectly from members of the provincial or federal NDP?
Okay, we're going to have to call it there because that's time for the question. Stephen, you can respond, and then there's 2.5 minutes for debate.
Well, certainly. I mean, I think the former Premier, Dan Miller, has come out and endorsed me. So that is a public endorsement from a high-profile NDP, British Columbia NDP individual. As to my campaign manager, is running the campaign. And just so that you know, Brendan, I've had 3 campaign managers. The first one got a job in the provincial government. The second one went down with surgery, and Ryan stepped in to fill that position. He's done an excellent job, and his role is to run the campaign. It's not to establish policy. I have a policy committee that works on that based on what I believe, where I'm going, and as to my donations and my campaign, honestly, I do not ask for political affiliations. When someone donates to my campaign, they donate to it. And we don't turn away donations, unless it's something blatantly outside of the elections BC guidelines. So that's it simple. I'm not sure what you're getting at, but that is the situation.
Okay, well, really my point is, Mr. Andrew, is that Ryan Painter has worked on multiple campaigns for NDP candidates in the past.
Yes.
And I mean, that being said, I mean, the last time you ran, you had the endorsement of a more conservative person, Aaron Gunn, right, was supporting you, and you kind of, you know, positioned yourself as a leader, a conservative voice, but now you have, you know, obviously you're in a different camp now. So what I'm saying is that
I sense that you don't really want an answer. You just want to make a statement. And if we're having a dialogue about it, that means you, one listens and one asks the question. I am here to represent all Victorians, Victoria for everyone, not a specific demographic. And I think that's important. I think that we need to get rid of the division that's been in this community, not propagate it. And I want to bring the city together. So whether you're left, whether you're right, whether you're business, whether you're non-business, wherever you are, I'm going to be the mayor for all British Columbians, all Victorians.
And that is time for that round. Thank you very much for the question from Brendan Marshall to Stephen Andrew. We go next down the line to Rafael Fuentes. You have 30 seconds to choose a candidate, ask a question, and then engage in debate.
Again, if elected, how would you work with council if you do not have a slate? And if the council consisted of, for example, three Vivas, three Better for Victoria, two Independents?
Mm-hmm. Oh, thanks. Thanks for the question. And I actually really appreciate the question because I would like to just reassure folks, I am not running with a slate. You'll see very shortly that you'll be receiving some information from me that speaks entirely just to me. And speaks to some of the principles and values and the goals that I hope to bring to the council table. Specific to your question, I think it's incredibly important to recognize that whoever the voters of Victoria select, that is going to be the council, and the council will work together, and it has to work together in order to make sure that ultimately the goals of every individual sitting there are to find the solutions and the compromises and the eventual outcomes that the most people in the city can live with. And it won't always be perfect, but it will always be in their best interest. And to do that, I think one of the most important sets of skills you have to have there, obviously, is the ability to bring diverse interests, competing interests together. My other job, as I've said to people, is as a facilitator. That's what I do for the rest of the time when I'm not on council. And I've worked on some very, very complicated issues over the years and taken some pride in bringing together very, very competitive people into rooms and being able to say, and let's talk about the paths forward. What is it that you want to collectively try and achieve? And invariably, I believe that no matter how divisive or how different or how what positions you start from when you're actually thinking about you think one thing, I think another, there is always a path forward. And really what's needed is someone who can bring those folks into a room and try and enable their ability to find those paths themselves. I think the chair of the board, which is what the council actually is, the board of a $400 million plus corporation, needs to have somebody there who has some experience in being able to not just run meetings, but actually to run meetings in a way which is civil, which allows there to be heated debate, passionate disagreement, but in a way which is safe, which actually allows there to be that debate, but ultimately settles on a goal of trying to create a common interest, a common outcome, common results for the people of Victoria. So I guess the answer to your question is you need a great facilitator. You need somebody who's calm and patient, who's going to be troubled by critics or crises, and has the ability to see the bigger picture and enable people to be expressive and individual, but continue to remind folks that they're there together to serve the people.
There's 10 seconds left if you have anything else to add.
Yes. Just to add, if elected, I will go with the MNP, Good Governance Recommendation. We'll do a new code of conduct, and we're going to consult, inform, and empower the people of Victoria. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. That was Rafael Fuentes' question for Marian Alto. Next down the line, Lyle Atkinson, you have 30 seconds to choose a candidate and pose your question.
I guess my question's going to go to Marian Alto as well. September the 8th, I phoned into City Hall to express some opinions that I had. Neither one of the council members here asked or replied to my request. Mayor Inalto, I'd like to have a little explanation of some of the backroom deals that have been done. The $200,000 that went to a special interest group you support, as well as the indigenous fund tax that you ask people to pay extra on their property.
And that's time for the question. 2.5 minutes now for discussion.
Can I ask for clarification?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure to what Mr. Atkinson's referring in the first half of his question around some sort of backroom fund. What is that?
There was a $200,000 donation made to an indigenous group that I believe you sit on the board of directors of.
Oh, I see.
And I would like to know what the accountability of that $200,000 was. I believe that's the figure that I've heard.
Okay, thanks very much for that clarification. Yes, I think Lyle's referring to a decision that council made to grant a $200,000 grant to the Songhees and Esquimalt Nations through their Economic Development Corporation. And that was an attempt to give them a bit of a spur to start some of the economic development work that they're doing within the city on the territories on which the city sits. The second part, I think, of Mr. Atkinson's question is referring to the request that was made, the offer that was made by the city. And I think, Stephen, correct me if I'm wrong, that was a unanimous decision in the end to offer the taxpayers of Victoria the opportunity to place some additional revenue if they chose, and this was entirely voluntary, in addition to the property taxes that they pay to the city, an opportunity to actually contribute to the same two nations. There was a reasonably significant return on that. I think it was in the range of around $135,000, $136,000 that was contributed, but it was entirely voluntary. I hope that that offer is made again next year, and that as people begin to embrace and become more aware of the issues around Indigenous reconciliation, that will be seen as one of many tools in the conversation around reconciliation.
No, thank you for clarification, because I don't think it was made clear to the taxpayers what this was going to be, whether it's voluntary. I have a bad feeling that it's going to be a permanent thing that's imposed on people who are already paying an average of $4,000 in property taxes in the city of Victoria.
There's still a few seconds left if there's any further follow-up.
I appreciate the question. I think there's always a great opportunity for us to learn from one another in reconciliation. These are two tools that the city created, which were a way to really demonstrate in a tangible, practical way that there's a commitment behind the words that we say around creating new relationships. And so I was very supportive of both of these endeavors. And as I say, I look forward to the opportunity to consider them again in the next year.
All right. Mayoral candidate Lyle Atkinson's question for Marian Alto. Next down the line, Stephen Andrew, you have 30 seconds.
Thank you. This question is for Brandon Marshall. Brandon, in your platform, you say that you're Victoria First, but you live and work in Esquimalt. Actually, I live in Victoria in Burnside Gorge. I live with the issues in this city. What makes you think that you can speak for the residents of Victoria when you're just living in another city?
Well, thank you for the question. I guess really, the best way to answer that is that I am actually born in Victoria. I lived in Victoria for over 30 years. I'm 42 years old right now. I was born on Burdett Street at the old Vic General. I grew up in James Bay.
Just let me finish.
It's important to understand that I've lived and worked here my whole life. Okay. My mother still lives in James Bay where I grew up. I go to Victoria periodically. My bank is downtown. I drive my kids downtown. We use the parks.
Home to Esquimalt every day. I mean, I was born in the United Kingdom, but I'm not running to be Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. I'm running to be Mayor of Victoria. Okay, I live with the issues at the decisions that I make at the council table.
Well, you
certainly wouldn't do that. You would be making those decisions, getting in your car and going home every night and sleeping in Esquimalt. You're not going to be responsible for any tax increases that you bring up.
Listen, what happens in Victoria doesn't just stay in Victoria. It affects the entire region. And for you've said that you support amalgamation. So if that were to happen, amalgamation, then what would you say? Is Esquimalt too close?
A different situation.
Oh, it would be different, but you support amalgamation. You support amalgamation. You're picking on me because I live
in Esquimalt.
I live closer to City Hall than you do, just so you know.
In Esquimalt, you're in a situation where your governance basically is walking away from the Amalgamated Police Department. So, which means,
what are you talking about? How so?
Esquimalt vetoed is moving away from the Victoria Police Department agreement. We already know that. The other issue that has come up there is that they've vetoed the budget, which has a significant impact on the issues of our city. We do not have the ACT teams. We won't be able to fund the ACT teams and get those up and rolling. Also, the crisis teams that have been. So, you know, I'd much rather see you working with the Esquimalt Council, bringing them to the table so that we could move forward on a plan to improve our city rather than try to dismantle the Victoria Police Department.
And that is time for that round. Now,
well, I want to answer. I didn't get to answer.
You can have 5 seconds real quick.
Well, first of all, I'm not on Esquimalt Council. I'm not a secret agent of Esquimalt. Okay. Victoria is my hometown. Victoria first and foremost. And to suggest that I shouldn't be running here is absurd.
Okay. There you go. Thank you very much. That was Stephen Andrews' question for Brendan Marshall. And now we go back to the other side of the table for the last question of this round, but we will return to this later. Marion Alto, you have 30 seconds.
Great. Thanks very much. Thanks, Ryan. And actually, I'd like to ask Stephen a question. And one of the things that council's been grappling with and certainly has succeeded with quite dramatically in the last year or so is recovery from COVID. And the various challenges that have been placed in the business community and the economy. And one of the things that I'll be speaking to later today is the reemergence and the resurgence of a plan that I'm proposing to implement very dramatically and quickly, the Shippoint Master Plan, which will have a tremendous impact on the economy locally and become something that's quite a regional showcase. So, Stephen, for you, can you speak a little bit to what very specific proposals that you'll be bringing forward, should you get the opportunity, that will boost the local economy?
Time for the question.
Absolutely, and thanks for that question, Marianne. And I'm really pleased that you're bringing forward the issue of the Shippoint Master Plan. I did speak with the city manager at our last council meeting, and I think it is a very significant development. But it was brought to the table during your time on council, and you tabled it. So if it was that urgent to bring the economic growth in the city, I would have maybe suggest that you looked at it sooner. I've been speaking with business people about it, and I know for a fact that it's an excellent plan. It does need to be reviewed, and certainly if I'm the mayor come October 15th, I will be bringing it back. The process that we can do that is to ensure that that plan is reviewed, because I understand it needs a few tweaks based on the information I've received from staff. And also, I believe that there are a number of leading business people and contributors within the city of Victoria and around the city of Victoria that have already committed to supporting it. So that certainly is a project that I would bring forth. The other thing I would do is I would continue to have meetings with business who feel they've been shut out of City Hall. They feel that their voices haven't been heard. Time and time again, I go into a business and they say they've seen no hide nor hair of a city councilor come into their building. Right here on Broad Street, there is a business that says in the 18 years, I was the first elected official that walked into their business. Same has happened when we had the crisis on Government Street with the closing of Government Street and the buses. So I would sit down and meet with business on a regular basis to hear their concerns and look at the development issues and the potential that are there. Also, I would be sitting down with the tourism industry and finding out what challenges that they have faced the city of Victoria can look at to restart the economy. As you know, I've already been a big supporter of the Build Back Victoria program, which has, I think, made a significant difference in the economy coming back, and I would continue to do that.
10 seconds?
Yeah, I think that I'm happy to hear that Stephen's going to support my plan, and I'm a bit concerned
I think it's a city plan,
I'm a bit concerned that he suggests that nothing's been done. staff did a tremendous job a few years ago, and they brought forward a number of different ways to make this possible.
And that is time for that question, I'm afraid. And that is time for our first round of one-on-one debates. But don't worry, we're going to do this again coming up shortly with the candidates getting to choose somebody else to have a discussion with. But as a quick little palate cleanser, we are going to do our rapid-fire round where we're going to ask questions that come from our listeners to the candidates in the room and have a quick 60 seconds from each candidate to give us an answer. We'll see how many we can get through. There might not be time for many, but we're going to start with this one. I don't think there's a surprise that many of our listeners want to know simply how you plan to vote on the missing middle housing initiative. Since Brandon Marshall kicked off the last round, we're going to go to Rafael Fuentes to begin with 60 seconds.
Thanks, Ryan. I will vote against the Missing Middle Housing Initiative. At this point, I have two perspectives. One, I was a former homeowner, and I'm also a renter right now. So Missing Middle is about home acquisition. It's not about affordability. So if you take the Missing Middle and sell my property and put up a fourplex, triplex, it's not going to be affordable for the average person.
Okay. Next, to answer the question, how would you vote on the Missing Middle Housing Initiative, Lyle Atkinson?
I'd have to be sort of semi-neutral, as I would have a conflict of interest. I own two properties in Victoria that I could put three of these units on because they're linked properties. But I think what we need to do is get the developers to make a portion of their building, maybe a third of a person's income, to be allowed to rent or own one of these properties. Building these triplexes will help short term, but we got to get that building at Harris Green built. There's 1,000 houses in that project that I think would be better served to the community than putting these fourplexes in communities.
Stephen Andrew.
Thank you for the question. In its current form, the missing middle policy is divisive policy, it's immature policy, and it was tried to be rushed through. So certainly I would bring it back. There are many aspects of it that I like that we can certainly work on, but it's dividing the community, and any policy that divides the community certainly is bad policy. I understand. We need homes. We are in a crisis. We've been moving forward. We have 5,200 homes approved already, and we need to move forward with those homes and get the shovels in the ground. As a former homeless person, when I was 22, I can tell you I know what housing means to an individual, and we need to move forward on that. But we need to ensure that the policy brings our community together, that we find a way forward together, and we need to make sure that the current policy is there, is tailored to ensure that we have success.
Marion Alto.
Thanks. I supported the missing middle policy when it came through to council after 2.5 years of public engagement and design. I think that at the very last session that we had, we made two very important amendments, which dealt with two of the issues that have come forward with concerns. That was affordability and height, both of which were amended to provide control over the height and doubling the amount of money that applicants would be able to contribute and required to commit it to the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. For me, the issue was much broader, and it was the fact that because we chose not to make a decision, we actually gave away our local authority to manage land use, even when we had been advised repeatedly by the provincial government that if we didn't actually engage something like missing middle, they would impose something on us. And a few days later, they did. And the next likely premier of the province has laid out a very, very broad housing policy that is much more dramatic than what we were proposing. I actually support the bulk of that, but the reality is that our council chose to give away local authority over land use, and I think that was an opportunity missed.
And Brendan Marshall.
Well, I support something similar to the missing middle. I also believe that it, and I said this to council, I don't think that it went far enough in terms of form and character. I do believe we need some kind of a blanket zoning solution that when people go into developing, when developers go into a project, they know what to expect. Everybody knows what to expect. But like I said, I don't think that the initiative went far enough in terms of form and character. And I would recommend that we engage those neighborhood associations and have each and every neighborhood association come up with a form and character plan, so we keep the beauty and the charm of the neighborhood, but at the same time we must have densification. And I don't want to lose that. I want to fight long and hard to be able to control and to have say in our zoning. And the province is likely to pull that if we do not act quickly.
And that is time. That's the first question answered. Second question that came from our listeners, and we did derive these from listeners. This is the one that the second most amount of people wanted to hear about, and it's property taxes. And I'm going to begin this question with a direct quote from one of our listeners who wrote about this. And they say, in 2009, I bought my house, and the yearly property taxes were, at that point, just over $3,500. 13 years later, they are now double that. Yes, the value of my house has doubled, but not my household income. When we talk about housing and affordability, I have not heard candidates talk a lot about property taxes. What is their plan to slow this down? So, Lyle Atkinson, you are next up to begin this round. So, how do you answer our listener's question?
Well, as a homeowner who pays $8,000 a year in property taxes, I think that we need to start running the city of Victoria like a business. As a small businessman, if I don't have $10,000 to pour concrete, I'm not going to pour $10,000 of concrete. I think we've been spending far too much with policing costs, having to deal with Pandora Street. I think that core needs to get straightened out. I think the hotels in Victoria need to be better managed than they have been. Come and go as you want and go out in the middle of the night and steal from people, that's costing the taxpayers a lot of money to do this program. I think we spent somewhere in around $108 million on hotels to house homeless people. We need to start asking the mayors in the provinces to stop sending their homeless to Victoria.
Next up, Stephen Andrew.
Thanks. This is a great question, and actually I hear this a lot when I speak with people on the door and in meetings that come into our campaign office. The way that the current council looks at its budget, they believe it's acceptable to have a rate of inflation lift plus 1%. I don't know where they get the 1% idea. It means essentially that we are given to increasing the city resources by 1% every year. But moreover than that, if people actually understand the budget, well, the first thing they do is they sit and they spend the surplus from the previous year. Then they go ahead and they spend what's called new revenue, and that's from new buildings that are put up. And then they go to the tax lift and 1%. I think we need to do a better job at budget time to ensure that we are keeping control of taxes, we're keeping control of spending, and we only do a lift if it's absolutely necessary.
Thank you. Now to Marion Alto.
Thanks very much for that great question. And I think we have to remember that property taxes are the primary source of income for any municipality. And they are, on average, as our former colleague Chris Coleman used to remind us, we get 8 cents on the tax dollar in the municipalities as compared to the province and the feds. So what that really means is that each municipality, and certainly not just Victoria, we have to actually look at what our revenue can produce from the perspective of creating and delivering services. And that means choices. We have to make choices about what's required, about what's important, about what people tell us that they want to do. And we have to be able to choose between one thing or the other, in the sense that we have to look at the policies that we have around what's allowable, but also look more importantly at what people expect from municipalities in a current and modern sense. We've gone way beyond the basics of the 1950s of just delivering sewage and trash pickup, and now we have to look at the larger sense of creating the vision of the city that people really want us to do. So it's about choice. It's a difficult choice, but it's about choice.
And now to the question still asking, what would you do to slow down rising property taxes? We turn to Brendan Marshall.
Well, I think what we need to do is really keep control on spending. Untold millions of dollars spent on hotels, over $30 million on the traffic redirection projects and bike lanes. That was up to at 2019. Now we're years past that. The road closure redirection projects continue to further just go full steam ahead. I would like to freeze those projects and do a cost-benefit analysis on many of these projects. And I think that we rein in the uncontrolled spending that's been happening over the last several years from the current mayor and council. I think that we can definitely bring taxes to a halt and work very hard at proper and sound spending in the city.
And finally, to Rafael Fuentes.
I believe the forecasted budget from between 2020 and 2020, the property taxes will start around $3,600. It's gone up to $3,700, $3,800. At 2023, it's $3,900. 2024, $4,000. What we'll have to do is be proactive. Be proactive about our infrastructure. Make sure it's good, and be proactive about using our money, tax dollars, with potential projects. So if we're proactive, be consistent, find the revenue, limit our spending. But I think what's really important is just be proactive about our spending. For example, not spending too much money on bridges anymore, because we're still paying for that. Potential by-elections, we have to really think about that as well for potential councillors and mayors, that we're not going to create a $200,000 by-election.
And that's time. Thank you to Rafael Fuentes and all of our candidates. Sadly, that's the last rapid-fire question we have time for if we want to save room for our second round of one-on-one debates, which is what we'll move to now. This is the same as the first round. The only difference is you have to pick somebody different. You can't debate the same person you chose last time, but you'll still have 30 seconds to ask the question, 2.5 minutes to engage in debate. And Stephen Andrew, you get the first pick.
Thank you. My question's for Mary Ann. Mary Ann, you voted to allow 24/7 camping in the parks with no mitigation, no program to avoid the litany of issues, social issues that we've seen in previous tent cities, crime, ill health. I wondered if you regret that vote.
I don't regret any vote I took, based on principles, based on circumstances. And I think, Stephen, if you hearken back to look at what situation we were in at that point, this was a time when our beloved provincial health officer made a decision to essentially shut shelters overnight. And the 1,500 or so people who, those of us who are privileged enough to have housing, we didn't see because they were sheltered, were suddenly placed into the public eye. In that case, I defy anyone to come forward with a plan to institute quickly that could have dealt any better with trying to find a place for those people to shelter. Give me a chance to finish the answer to your question, I will say that that type of a decision is extremely indicative of the challenge that faces any council member in an urban environment in an evolving city, which has to deal with the realities of living with urban issues. And for us, at that time, we had a position where we had to take responsibility for our own people. These are Victorian people who had no other options placed on the street, not by a decision that was made by council, but was made in the interest of the better health of our entire community. And Stephen, I have to say this type of decision-making is made because they're based on the best possible outcome, not on optics, not on what people might think about what our decisions might be.
Let's leave some time for a follow-up from Stephen.
I'm going to jump in here, Marianne, and just say that I think Victoria decided, the council decided to go it alone. I didn't see any consideration for those that were housed and the implications of what went on.
Stephen, actually, out of that came some of the most profound and active citizen-based support systems we've ever seen.
People breaking into
The local neighbors here who have created organizations to support their unhoused neighbors have been robust and continue to this day. And in fact, those same people are actually approaching City Council asking us to do more, asking us to be more proactive in dealing with folks who are unhoused.
We're about out of time. Stephen, one quick. No, Lyle, just one at a time. Stephen, can
I? I will wrap up. Clearly, I hear what you say, but you decided to go it alone. There was no mitigation. there still isn't mitigation. We're still trying to clean up from the after effects of that issue with appropriate supports. And it seemed to me that there was no consideration of the people that were had to live with the fallout of it.
And we're
Certainly I and many other Victorians had to deal with
it. And we're at time for that round. That was Stephen Andrews' question for Marion Alto. We move down to Marion Alto, and you get to pick the next candidate.
That's such a great question. I guess I'd like to ask Brendan a question. And Brendan, you've talked a little bit on your various platforms about your commitment to ending homelessness. And I guess I'd like to ask you, how do you plan to do that?
Well, it's a very good question, and it's a very important question. You know, when you look at how bad it's gotten, I mean, you understand you were on the coalition to end homelessness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, really since then, it's really just gotten worse, quite a bit worse. And you know, a supply issue like we have right now is one of the big ones. You know, when you have a mayor and council that just has been kicking the dog for the last 2 years and longer, and we are 6,000 units or so behind where we need to be, we need more housing. We need not just middle, but more lower income housing. And I really think that the council has just been punting around and mismanaging, just an entrenchment of mismanagement has been taking place. And I think that, you know, I spoke to the when it comes to, and those are just everyday families that are struggling and being priced out of the city. That's just mismanagement. Then you've got homelessness on the streets. You've got a council and mayor that have been running on an ideological basis for all these years. I spoke to the chief of police recently, and I knew things were bad. I mean, you can tell. You can just look out. But I had no idea how bad it really was. I had no idea how much that hotel purchase had failed. And now we've got criminals that have literally taken over some of those buildings and are running the show. This is a massive failure. And I don't think it's one that can be overlooked.
Getting near time,
so Brendan,
Alto.
Brendan, if I hear you correctly, what you're suggesting is we need more housing. That's a great answer because we do. But I haven't heard anything about how you're actually going to create more housing. And I haven't heard anything specific about what type of supports or additional resources you will bring to bear should you have the opportunity to actually assist people who are currently unhoused. So I agree with you that housing is essential. I disagree with you that we haven't been creating housing as we have created thousands of units in the last few years.
10 seconds for a response.
Well, you know, I think that we need to have a wide range of housing solutions and safety nets. I mean, we could be encouraging more cooperative housing associations to come in. We can encourage, more BC housing. We need more safety nets, like I said, we need to have zoning so we can actually build tasteful homes.
We are out of time for that round. Thank you, Marion Alto's question for Brendan Marshall. Now we go to Rafael Fuentes. You have 30 seconds.
For Stephen, the city has banned single-use plastic. So why is it okay for, I see many of your signs that are using plastic on metal wire, and we have that bylaw. Can you explain that?
Absolutely. So the bylaw refers directly to bags that we find in supermarkets and retail. I will think you'd see that every single candidate has some sort of sign. It's unfortunate. Most of the signs are derivative of plastics or core plastics. So there's no bylaw banning that kind of plastic. It's just the plastic bags. And I think it's been quite successful, but I'm glad you brought that up because it shows what happens when a council steps outside of its lane and introduces plans to social engineering in a way without checking to see what its legislative authority is. People may not be aware of this, but when the plastic ban came in from the city of Victoria, what happened is it went to court, and the court said, City of Victoria, you don't have the authority to do that. You've stepped way outside of your lane. And certainly I can tell you, sitting at the table, it's interesting to hear the advice that one gets from staff, the advice that we get from our legal authority, our legal solicitor, And we tend to ignore that sometimes. And that's
thank you.
Not
thank you
a,
for
a way to go.
Answer that. I appreciate that. If I have a bit more time, I just want to say that I do live in currently live in Victoria. I'm being pushed out because of affordable housing, so I'm renting at a in View Rural. So, in my opinion, I have two kids in Victoria. I have equity in a home in Victoria, so I'm very entrenched in the city, especially with a lot of cancer groups in town as well. So I'm very entrenched with the city, and I'm passionate and caring about the city. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Raphael.
Okay. Now, I believe I skipped over Brendan Marshall because you were engaged in Marian Alto's question, and I skipped over to Raphael. So I'd like to go back to you to have your 30 seconds to pick a candidate.
Yeah. So my question is for Marianne. Now, as we know, you were on the Coalition to End Homelessness. You were a director on there, and still a director there. Now, you're not on the director there, but you were for quite a while, several years. And given that, and you say on your website that you want to have homes for all, how is it that with your track record over several years, how is it that you expect voters to trust that you can solve this problem?
Thanks for the question. Just to clarify, I was on the Coalition and Homelessness Board some years ago for about 2 years, and before I was actually elected to council. And during that time, I actually did quite a lot of work trying to assist them in creating a new program, which would involve unhoused people actually at the board level. And it was a precursor to actually a staff position that they created sometime later to actually be that coordinator. I'm actually quite pleased with that because it was the first time that the coalition itself had actually engaged with and tried to include the comments and create a way for decisions to be influenced by the folks that they were actually trying to help. So just to clarify, that was a long time ago, but I was very keen to have that opportunity. And it certainly did help me understand a lot more on a personal level what it is like to constantly being in a place where you have no shelter, no housing, no supports. And I think fast forwarding to your second part of your question, the council in the last 10 years, 11 years, has done incredible work in trying to support the provincial government in its creation of supportive housing, has been as robust as possible, as supportive as possible in making that an easy path and making it a path which allows those types of applications to be prioritized at the top of the line. And we have, as you well know, an Affordable Housing Trust Fund that contributes to not-for-profit housing in that way. And so I have to go back to reminding folks that housing is not a municipal responsibility. But that being said, the effects of unhoused populations do come to the table for the municipality, and we do have to deal with them, which is why we are good partners with the province, why we support things like BC Housing, as you mentioned, and a variety of other not-for-profit organizations whose whole focus it is to actually create good housing, not just supportive housing, but affordable housing and housing for all different types of individuals trying to deal with the circumstances in which they find themselves. So I'm very proud of the short time I spent with the Coalition to End Homelessness years ago. And I think that if you look candidly at the work that the city's done in the last 10 years, you'll find that we are head and shoulders above what many municipalities have done and trying to not just enable housing, but to work with our partners who actually can create and build it.
All right, you have 10 seconds
left
for a final thought.
I think that it's important for voters to know that you supported the hotel debacle and the purchase of the hotels.
Okay, well,
ushered people into those hotels.
Right, and 5 seconds for a response
without,
to that.
Yeah, without
the province
any
made
support,
those decisions,
with no support.
And we understood why. We assumed that they would be temporary, and in fact, the province has made the commitment that they are transitional places and that they intend to build permanent housing on all of
right.
those particular...
We're going to have to wrap up that round and make sure we have room for Lyle Atkinson for his question, which will be our final one of this round.
I'm going to guess in my question will go to Stephen Andrews because there's such a lack of diversity at this table with only five of us here. The two candidates seem to want to banter each other instead of giving new candidates some airtime. As well as the sheltering in place, the 24 camping, I'd like to know why the business owners in Victoria have to put up with drug dealers in front of their businesses and by law and the police are not allowed to intervene.
Thanks for the question a lot. I think there's a lack of understanding perhaps in the observation. Bylaw is not allowed to arrest. Bylaw can only get compliance. police can arrest and move people on. But we, in Canada, we have the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And whether you like it, whether you agree, whether you don't, unfortunately, that does allow free movement in Canada. The issue that I think that we need to do for the people that are running businesses downtown is to look for solutions that are not just outside of policing. The Attorney General of British Columbia said it the other day, we can't arrest our way out of some of the issues that we're seeing in this city, and I don't think we can police our way out. I think that what we need to do is we have to find a multitude of ideas to be able to care for the people that are on the street. I mean, they are more likely, Lyle, from the research that I have seen, the research that, others have seen, they're more likely to be the victim of violence and crime. What we do need to do, though, is we need to focus on the criminals that have come to Victoria and are preying on all citizens. And that is something that, as mayor, I would bring to the table. I would certainly send that message out. I would provide leadership at the table that we have to respect, support, and resource our bylaw and our first responders in police and within the firefighters that we have, and ensure that they can do their job. Because right now, we are so stretched. You may know that we're 35 police officers down right now, off due to stress. I mean, it's become absolutely ridiculous. We are not only at a crisis point, excuse me, for dealing with some of the homeless situations that we have in our city, but also a crisis point with our first responders. We need those people to be here. We need to ensure that we have a fully resourced first responder team. If we don't, we're going to continue to see the situation getting worse. And as mayor, I certainly will support that.
Yeah, final thought, Lyle.
Yeah, my final thought is I want to thank you, first of all, for pointing out Miss Marianne's miscommunication. Most of the homeless people are not from Victoria. They've come from other parts of the provinces and the cities.
Okay, well, we're at time with that. Thank you very much. That was Lyle Atkinson's question for Stephen Andrew. And with that, we are at time. We have completely run out of time for today's debate. It was lively with lots said. I thank you all for coming in. One more time, you've been hearing Marian Alto, Brendan Marshall, Rafael Fuentes, Lyle Atkinson, and Stephen Andrew, five of the eight candidates who will be appearing on your ballot on October 15th. Stay tuned to CFAX 1070 for full coverage of the 2022 municipal elections. Thank you.